First know what the rules are, and prove to be the exception to them. Above all, your clothing must have attitude that tells people who you are. Stone's Rule Number 115. Dick Nixon's Silver Bullets. Dick Nixon made a mean martini, and was quite proud of his martini mixing skills, calling them silver bullets. Gin was the old man's preference, over vodka. Undoubtedly, Nixon honed his mixology skills, tending bar at Nick's hamburger stand. An impromptu canteen put together by the enterprising Navy lieutenant for war-weary service members passing through Nixon's post in the South Pacific in World War II. Dick served up booze and burgers. Nixon served at Guadalcanal, and later at Green Island as officer in charge of the South Pacific Combat Air Transport Command, supervising C-47 cargo operations. Lieutenant Commander Nixon was legendary for his ability to acquire hooch for the boys. Generally speaking, Nixon was not introspective. He hated to talk about the past, always looking forward instead. It was hard to get him to talk about Ike, McCarthy, JFK, LBJ, and the deep secrets he held close for so many decades. But after two drinks, the old man became absolutely loquacious, and would reveal astonishing things, cloaked in Nixonian intrigue, of course. "More than one of these, and you want to beat your wife," Nixon reportedly told his then 26-year-old assistant, John P. Sears. The coolest thing about Nixon's silver bullet was that it was borrowed by Nixon from no less a legend than British Prime Minister and wartime leader, Winston Churchill. Stone's Rule Number 116. Dick Nixon's Silver Bullet Martini Recipe. The Recipe. Ingredients. 1 bottle of small to medium-sized green olives with pimento. Dry vermouth of choice. Fine Russian vodka, or Tanqueray gin as Nixon preferred. Assembly. Drain the brine from the bottle of olives, leaving olives intact. Refill olive bottle with water. Shake vigorously. Drain water completely. Refill olive bottle with dry vermouth. Refrigerate the bottle. Fill a traditional martini glass. Fill a cocktail shaker with ice, preferably a vintage Tiffany-hammered silver Art Deco shaker. Fill the shaker with vodka or gin, according to preference, until the ice is covered. Shake very vigorously. If there are not tiny shards of ice floating on the surface of the silver bullet, you have not shaken the mixture vigorously enough. Pour the mixture into the chilled martini glass. Add 1 vermouth-drenched olive from the jar. Return the vermouth olive jar to the refrigerator for use for your next silver bullet. Stone's Rule Number 117. It's gravy, not sauce. I grew up in the Connecticut suburbs of New York City, in a working-class family that's half Italian. Every Sunday, my mother would rise early to assemble her Sunday gravy, which is what Italian-Americans in Philadelphia, much of New Jersey, and enclaves of Connecticut called your basic red sauce. The recipe is precise, and the specific list of ingredients inviolable, or the entire production is doomed from the start. The centerpiece ingredients of this Italian-American staple are canned imported San Marzano tomatoes. San Marzano is not a brand of tomato, but rather a type of plum tomato from a specific region of Italy. No other canned imported tomatoes will do. Be vigilant about tomatoes labeled San Marzano-style tomatoes, because such an annotation on the can means someone is selling you fugazi. I repeat, only real San Marzano tomatoes will do. Now, to the recipe. First, take a medium-sized yellow onion and dice it. Sauté the onion on a medium flame in olive oil, specifically labeled for sautéing and grilling, until translucent. Take 3 large cloves of minced garlic and add to the pan. Note, garlic has a lower burning point than onions, and should only be added when the onions are translucent, but before they brown. Be careful not to burn the garlic. Add 2 cans of whole San Marzano plum tomatoes, including the juice. Using a spatula, crush and break apart the tomatoes. Add 2.5 tablespoons of oregano, 1 tablespoon of mixed Italian spices, basil, marjoram, thyme, rosemary, sage. Add coarse black pepper and salt to taste. Remember, the tomatoes are naturally salty, so be cautious. Let this mixture cook at a low to medium heat, as it will need to thicken. Add 1 can of imported tomato paste and an equal-sized can of water. Continue cooking. The flavors only meld after several hours cooking at a low heat, being careful not to burn the gravy or to allow it to become too thick. There you have it. Sunday gravy. If you want to employ it in a hearty meat sauce, I prefer a mix of equal parts ground beef, ground veal, and ground pork, sautéed with the onions, but before you add the garlic. Again, be careful not to burn the garlic. Best served over rigatoni, ziti, penne, or a thin number 11 spaghetti. Mangia. Stone's Rule Number 118. Never wear the same suit 2 days in a row. Buy quality garments and take good care of them, and they will serve you well. This includes rotating your suits, allowing them to wear out between wearings. Avoid dry cleaning, because the chemicals used in that harsh process will stress fibers that are already weakened from absorbing black, blue, or gray dye. This is why suits that have been repeatedly dry cleaned begin to shine. It is better to dip a whisk broom in cool water to clean a suit, allowing it to dry by hanging it outdoors, but not in direct sunlight. To keep trousers sharply creased, a gentleman pulls the pant leg towards him before sitting down. In dire circumstances, a pair of trousers can be put between a pair of bed mattresses to restore their crease. A proper pair of braces, known in the United States as suspenders, allow your trousers to hang from the waist so as not to cinch your silhouette the way a belt would. Under no circumstances are elastic suspenders that clip on the waistband of your trousers with a metal clip acceptable. This is also true of pocket protectors. Stone's Rule Number 119. The press is not the enemy. This Stone rule may come as a surprise, given the contentious and even hostile relationship that exists between the mainstream media and most successful, self-made, independent-minded political activists and leaders. Richard Nixon hated the press, even though the print media made him a national figure with the Alger Hiss case in 1947. Nixon also leaked with such skill as vice president to Ike that he enjoyed great ink from the New York Herald Tribune, Los Angeles Times, and the New York Times. Nixon was 100% right about the press corps favoring JFK in 1960. He also got pretty rough treatment from the California media during his aborted 1962 comeback bid, running for governor of that state. Jim Doyle, who was spokesman for Watergate special prosecutor Archibald Cox, and later a crack political reporter for Newsweek, taught me to understand and respect the power of people who buy ink by the barrel, or get 100,000 hits a day, to translate this into the parlance of the Internet age. Be straight with and helpful to reporters, and most, but certainly not all, will be straight with you, and maybe even honest, too. Those who are not straight or honest with you are to be fed either disinformation or nothing at all, whatever is needed to make them look foolish. Capiche? Stone's Rule Number 120. Avoid the obvious. Dog Bites Man is not a story. To break through the media clutter of the modern-day world, your ideas have to be pungent, over-the-top, provocative, and outrageous. Politics is theater, but sometimes it is performance art, for its own sake. Stone's Rule Number 121. They are all pink on the inside. I hate racism. I abhor discrimination. And as a conservative, I have a deep belief in the civil rights of every person, regardless of color. Richard Nixon had an unblemished record on civil rights. In 1956, as vice president, Nixon went to Harlem to declare, "America can't afford the cost of segregation. The following year, he played a key role in rounding up the votes that ensured passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1957 in the U.S. Senate, winning the praise of Dr. Martin Luther King. Nixon supported the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and although he employed a Southern strategy to win the votes of whites through his tough-on-crime and win the war in Vietnam campaign themes, he also desegregated the public schools and instituted affirmative action programs to redress historical discrimination. During Richard Nixon's presidency, the Department of Justice budget for civil rights enforcement was increased by 800%. Nixon appointed more black Americans to federal offices than JFK and LBJ combined. The Nixon administration created the Office of Minority Business Enterprise. Under Nixon, SBA loans to minorities soared by 1,000%, and aid to black colleges doubled. When Nixon became president, fewer than 18% of public schools in the South had been desegregated. At the time Nixon was driven from office in 1974, that number had reached 89%. There were no race riots, no harsh rhetoric, no demonstrations, and no violence. Attorney General John Mitchell carried out the mandate from the Supreme Court to desegregate the schools in an orderly and firm but calm manner. A Republican who is not a strong advocate of civil rights is of no interest to me. We are the party of Lincoln and must be four square in support of equal justice for all people. Stone's Rule Number 122. The Democrats are the party of slavery. The Republicans are the party of freedom. Southern Democrats of the old Confederacy were the progenitors and defenders of slavery all the way through the Civil War, and continued to propagate institutional racism for another century with Jim Crow segregation laws and similarly racist public policies. Consistent with its horrible racist history, today's Democrat Party seeks to keep black people in bondage, slave to the Democrats' insidious and destructive public policies that intentionally construct an artificial social and economic hierarchy around elitist welfare state paternalism. Just like the Democrats of yesteryear, today's Democrats want black Americans securely confined to the Democrats' narrow, exploitive political plantation. What I think black Americans want and deserve, as much as any American, is a piece of the economic pie, a real stake in the game, and the ability to rise on their talent and merit, rather than be perpetual supplicants of the state. They want to be employers, not just employees. The job of government in all this is the opposite of what Democrats have been pushing for nearly a century, with their progressive, big government scams and schemes. Rather than controlling the world with endless regulations and restrictions and mandates, the government's role must be to remove barriers to free enterprise. Government must foster programs to get free enterprise capitalism moving in our inner cities, as well as in any part of America that is suffering chronic economic depression. Donald Trump understood this intuitively. It was a huge factor in his victory. Now President Trump must deliver on this. Sadly, most Republicans don't put forward such a message or propose policies consistent with it, despite its being their political birthright as the party of Lincoln. It is up to the Republican Party to wake up and shake off its largely reactive sleepiness about the question of race in America. It does not require embracing racial identity politics to give full-throated, thoughtful, attractive voice to the better alternative to the Democrat Party's cynical racialist opportunism and systematic political predation on minority groups. Stone's Rule Number 123. Many are cold, but few are frozen. This was the political maxim a small-time political operative from New Jersey named Arthur Miller. Arthur was 340 pounds and had a truly terrible toupee, but he had a confident strut, and his organizational and persuasive talents were remarkable. Miller also controlled the young Republicans in New Jersey as part of his faction of the New Jersey State Republican Party. He was a true wheeler and dealer, always looking to wet his beak, as legendary political boss George Washington Plunkett would say. Arthur never viewed today's adversary as tomorrow's enemy. He believed anyone in politics could be persuaded to do something. Once you convinced them, it was in their best interest. Many are cold, but few are frozen, Miller would say. The key is to separate the cold from the frozen, and find out what will turn the cold opponent into a warm ally. Stone's Rule Number 124. Size matters. Senator John Tower of Texas was diminutive, but impeccably tailored in custom suits by Anderson & Shepard of Savile Row, London. Short in stature, and a U.S. senator from Texas, Tower was the only man who could justify a custom English-tailored suit and highly polished black cowboy boots. Congressman J.J. Jake Pickle was an LBJ crony and congressman from Texas. Pickle weighed 300 pounds and was known for his slovenly dress and ill-fitting baggy poplin suits from Sears Roebuck. Tower admonished Pickle one day about the merits of English tailoring and recommended it to Pickle. "That's a nice suit you got on, John. What does it cost in a man's size?" Stone's Rule Number 125. The fat should avoid horizontal stripes. The thin should avoid verticals. Horizontal stripes make you look broader and shorter. Vertical stripes make you look taller and thinner. Dress with each in accordance to your weight and body type, not your preference. The horizontal striped shirt that Cary Grant wears in To Catch a Thief looks great on him, but would look terrible on Sidney Greenstreet or any other 350-pounder. Stone's Rule Number 126. Men over 35 require pleats in their trousers, unless very fat. The major trouble with trousers in modern times is their lack of material. Trousers today are like the little church in the valley, no ballroom. Lyndon Johnson once told the president of Farris Slacks, who was making him several pairs of complimentary trousers, that he didn't want to feel like a fella straddling a wire fence. This is why English tailors and their Italian cousins invented full-cut pleated trousers with many variations, including reverse pleats. A good tailor can use pleats to trim a stout gentleman down or make a thin gentleman look broader, always thinking of the silhouette he is creating. The only place pleats don't belong is on blue jeans. Stone's Rule Number 127. No one ever built a statue to a committee. As G.K. Chesterton said, you can search all the parks in all the cities and find no statues of committees. Advertising pioneer David Ogilvy was also fond of this saying. The essence of effective leadership and success in the political arena most often requires decision-making authority to rest in the hands of a single person. You travel fastest alone. You risk no leaks when only you have the information. Decision-making by committee is a sure way to lose a bid for public office or to blow the launch of a commercial advertising campaign. When products like a television commercial or a sophisticated voter mailing are tweaked by 20 people, there are simply too many cooks in the kitchen. Committees breed timidity and interpersonal accommodation rather than pointed results. The thrust of important political arguments and buzzwords get diluted when they pass through many hands for revision. Central authority is required for quick decision-making, and blitzkrieg is sometimes required in the political or business arena. Leaving key or pressing decisions in the hands of a committee is death. I won't work for any campaign or corporate client where final decision-making authority isn't vested in one person. War councils breed defeat, said General Douglas MacArthur. Stone's Rule Number 128. Make your most difficult phone call first. I learned this from Southern California political legend and one of the longest-serving U.S. senators in history, Strom Thurmond. Thurmond was as aggressive a user of the telephone as any politician could be. Strom would call cronies, college and military chums, farmers, business owners, local polls, county sheriffs, judges, really anyone who had any influence with South Carolina voters. Thurman would comb the newspapers to find people whose children had died, or the names of the wives of recently deceased veterans. He'd call the parents, or the widow, or the next of kin, and express his heartfelt condolences. Everyone got a card from the good senator on their birthday, too. In these keeping-in-touch phone calls, Strom would dole out federal goodies as prolifically as he would homespun advice. I once walked in on him when he was giving a widow in Florence the precise recipe for a concoction of prune juice and lemons that Strom told her would cure both her cold and her constipation. This endless stream of personal phone calls to back home was Thurman's folksy way of helping his constituents, but also of keeping their vote. Make your toughest phone call, the one where you must deliver bad news early in the day, or it will never get made, old Strom told me. Stone's rule number 129. The bigger the score, the longer the gestation. America is a great country, because a person either born here, or who comes here with nothing, can achieve the American dream. I have gotten great satisfaction out of political battles I have fought, and the entrepreneurial endeavors in which I have made money. A business deal that could yield potentially enormous amounts of money will never happen quickly. The more moving parts a deal has, and the less simplicity, the longer it will take. True entrepreneurialism requires patience to achieve great wealth. Stone's rule number 130. Three men can keep a secret of one, if two of them are dead. This ominous maxim was posted on the wall of the Louisiana mob boss Carlos Marcelo's headquarters. He means nothing is a secret if more than one person knows about it. In truth, there are no secrets. If you tell someone something, assume it will leak, even if what you tell them is said in jest. Stone's rule number 131. The word assume makes an ass out of you and me. It's a common saying, but this anecdote proves it's always worth remembering. Jeb Stuart Magruder, director of the Committee for the Re-Election of the President, CREEP, was a pretty boy who the old Nixon hands like Nick Rui and Ron Walker routinely derided as Steve Stunning. In 1972, Magruder was my supervisor, as was his right-hand man, Herbert L. Bart Porter. Both went to jail for their role in the Watergate cover-up. Magruder was an insufferable jerk. Nevertheless, it was Porter who dressed me down in front of Magruder in a staff meeting when I said, "I assume," in one of my answers to a question from my boss. "Assume?" Porter screamed. "Look at the letters. It makes an ass out of you and me." I felt like an insect, but Porter was right. Never assume. No. Stone's rule number 132. A way to keep your trousers pressed. Use your bed as a trouser press. A very good plan is to place the trousers under the mattress of a bed, as the pressure will mimic that of trouser stretchers, helping them from becoming baggy at the knees. Stone's rule number 133. Tie your own bow tie. The clip-on bow tie is always to be avoided. The pre-tie bow tie can be acceptable, but a gentleman should know how to tie his own. Perfection is actually to be avoided. The properly tied bow tie should be slightly askew. These days, most gentlemen will wear a bow tie only for formal wear. Yet a properly sized bow tie, jauntily knotted, can work for some men. Think Daniel Patrick Moynihan, Arthur Schlesinger Jr., George Will, and at one time, Tucker Carlson. It is worth noting that many people associate bow ties with salesmen and carny barkers. Therefore, it would be safe to say that there are certain professions, say, trial attorney, where a bow tie is probably not the best choice. The following method is the simplest way to tie a bow tie. Put the tie round your neck with the left hand end about a couple of inches below the right. Tie in a single knot and bring the left hand end, which should still be the longer of the two, over so that it covers the right. Make the left-hand loop of the bow with the right-hand end, which should then be at right angles to the left. Then bring the left hand up so that it goes right round the left-hand loop. Then fold the left-hand end and push it through the center loop, which has been formed. If this is done properly, the left-hand end makes the right-hand bow of the tie, and all that remains to be done is to pull the under part of the two bows tightly, and the tie will be fixed. Stone's Rule Number 134. White Dress Shirts, After 6. This is an old custom. White is the most formal shirt a man can wear. Broad stripes, thin stripes, subtle plaids, and more business-oriented colors are for daytime. At night, a true gentleman dining at the 21 Club or Gallagher's Steakhouse on 52nd and Broadway should have changed into a clean white shirt for his evening affairs. Going up to Harlem to listen to jazz and do the club scene inappropriately shirted would be in a sartorial error. A compromise. White collar and cuffs, with a striped solid or tiny patterned dress shirt, can sub for those who think all white is too boring. Stone's Rule Number 135. Blue blazers and khaki pants are great for college students or Saturdays, but not appropriate for business attire. In 1980, I recommended Lee Atwater to Ronald Reagan's national political director, Charlie Black, to handle the southern region of the country for the Reagan campaign. Atwater had managed Strom Thurmond's tough re-election in 1978 and had been an ally and fellow blues enthusiast who I kept in touch with. Atwater went on to obliterate former Texas Governor John Connally in the South Carolina Republican presidential primary. It was in the same primary that Atwater and I went to Bill Buckley's dissolute brother, Reed Buckley, who was living off of scotch and public speaking gigs. The brothers sounded identical. I induced Reed Buckley to tape radio commercials attacking George Bush, and then dubbed on a lead-in that said, "Well, Mr. Buckley, what do you think about George Bush?" They were killer. I told Atwater that he could not come to Washington without a suit, so he agreed to go to Brooks Brothers with me to pick out a couple of suitable models for his new job. Atwater blanched when he saw the price. $275. I was spending $1,800 on custom-made suits at the time. Stone's Rule Number 136. Cowboy hats are like hemorrhoids. Eventually, every asshole gets them. Cowboy hats are fine if you're from Texas, or Nevada, or Wyoming, or Montana. I find the people who wear them in Soho, or Tribeca, or Beverly Hills, or Santa Monica, or San Francisco are uniformly assholes. No one who wasn't born in a western state should be allowed to wear a cowboy hat. Although, I guess I would grant an exemption for rock stars. But even there, it is distasteful. I respect it on the range, but not in the fashionable boits in Manhattan. After Lyndon Johnson selected Hubert Humphrey as his running mate, he forced Humphrey to go to his LBJ ranch and dress in an identical cowboy hat and western garb as Johnson did. Humphrey looked like a mini-me. Johnson did it to humiliate him and to show him who would be boss in the new Johnson administration. Stone's Rule Number 137. Never wear a double-breasted suit and a button-down collar. The peak lapel double-breasted suit is the most formal of suits. The button-down shirt is the most informal of shirts. They don't go together. A double-breasted suit requires a starched collar, either Windsor, spread, or medium or long point. Under no circumstances should a button-down collar shirt be worn with a double-breasted suit. I know. Fred Astaire did it. You're not Fred Astaire. Stone's Rule Number 138. Dark raincoats are for hoodlums. A raincoat is a necessity if you live in a part of the country or the world with precipitation. Nothing beats the classic Burberry trench coat in various weights and linings. Feeling that, raincoats should be light in color and utilitarian in their ability to repel rainwater. Dark raincoats are low class and for hoodlums, mafioso, or Chinese gang members. Stone's rule number 139. Being well-dressed should never become a costume. Being well-turned down should never morph into a costume. I like the way Tom Wolfe dresses. I once snagged a seat next to him at a spectator dinner party. His tailoring is fine, but his look is too outdated for everyday wear by anyone but him. No one makes celluloid collars anymore. His look is Victorian. It works for him, but it would not work for anyone else. Classic men's styling has really not changed since the 1930s, and a well-cut double-breasted suit works as well in 1938 as it does in 2018. Men's style may have taken some detours, like the shapeless sack suit taking over in the 50s, and the polyester deco-inspired menswear of the 1970s, being the decade that good taste forgot. Yet men's style today has rotated back to the fundamentals of the 1930s. Tucker Carlson reportedly abandoned the bow tie because he correctly determined that it had become costume, and he is at least partially right. Even though I like a Natalie-tied bow tie, I would not wear them out of fear for exclusivity. I feared that this sartorial transition by Tucker would rob him of his mojo. Fortunately, that has not happened, largely because of his unerring good taste in the selection of four-in-hand neckwear. Tucker has not only survived without his bow ties, he has thrived. This dude can rock the regimental stripes. Stone's rule number 140. He who laughs last, laughs heartiest. Revenge is a dish that tastes best when eaten cold, said George L. Clark, Jr., chairman of the Kings County, Brooklyn Republican County Organization. Clark, whose mother was Italian, was paraphrasing an important Sicilian proverb. I will often wait years to take my revenge, hiding in the tall grass, by stiletto at the ready, waiting patiently until you think I have forgotten or forgiven a past slight. And then, when you least expect it, I will spring from the underbrush and plunge a dagger up under your rib cage. So if you have fucked me, even if it was years ago, don't think yourself safe. Stone's Rules. 1. Entering the arena. Number 1. There are men of action and men of words. Number 2. You can't win if you don't get in the game. Number 3. Don't hide your scars. They make you who you are. But don't fight the last war either. Number 4. Past is fucking prologue. Number 5. Make your luck. Number 6. Reach higher. Number 7. Miracles do happen. Number 8. If life is a performance, be a costume, and develop good dressing habits early. Number 9. Dress with sprezzatura. Number 10. Dress British, think Yiddish. Number 11. To win, you must do everything. Number 12. Think big, be big. Number 13. Never quit. Number 14. Never be scared of anyone or anything. 2. First impressions. Number 15. If you are engaged in any business or profession, you are much more likely to succeed if you are well-dressed than if you are badly dressed. Number 16. The only thing worse in politics than being wrong is being boring. Number 17. Look good, feel great, and solid sartorial advice. Number 18. White shirt plus tan face equals confidence. Number 19. Great leaders have personal style, and being well-dressed doesn't take time. Number 20. Use a cigar. Number 21. Great leaders are detached. Number 22. Build a foundation for your wardrobe, And cheap underwear is even a greater mistake with men than with women. Number 23. The blazer is the foundation of a gentleman's wardrobe. And no bolo ties east of the Mississippi. Number 24. The suit. And avoid dry cleaning. Number 25. A black square-bottomed knitted silk tie is a necessity. Number 26. Build a foundation for your wardrobe. Number 27. The cut of the suit matters, and remember the silhouette. Number 28. Never hold a meeting unless you know what result you want out of the meeting. Number 29. Be on time. Number 30. Important meeting? Blue suit. And your pants have to fit. Number 31. Mix and match. Plus gray flannel, brown suede shoes, yes. Number 32. Two-toned shoes and white bucks, only after Memorial Day. Number 33. A black suit should only be worn by chauffeurs or undertakers. Number 34. Tuxedos with notched lapels are for waiters. Number 35. Hang a name on your opponent. Number 36. Brown is the color of shit. Number 37. To see how a candidate will perform in office, look at their campaign. Number 38. Check out their shoes. And if you splattered your patent leather evening pumps with mud when going out in black tie, wipe with champagne, not Vaseline. Number 39. Wear your cockade inside your hat. Number 40. Utilize finishing touches. 3. Going on the attack. Number 41. Attack, attack, attack. Never defend. Number 42. Let no attack go unanswered. Number 43. Plan your work, work your plan. Number 44. Write it down. Number 45. Plans are worthless. Planning is indispensable. Number 46. Attack your enemy on many fronts. Number 47. Big lie technique. Number 48. Work it from every angle. Number 49. The key word in choosing your wardrobe is appropriate. Number 50. Mix patterns, but not purpose. Number 51. Casual dress does not excuse you from good taste. Number 52. Don't get mad. Get even. Number 53. Go for the bank shot. Number 54. Hate is a stronger motivator than love. Number 55. Always praise him before you hit him. Number 56. He who speaks first loses. 4. How to win in politics. Number 57. Losers don't legislate. Number 58. Make your message big, bold, and simple. Number 59. The more you tell, the more you sell. Number 60. Sometimes you've got to turn chicken shit into chicken salad. Number 61. No shades. Number 62. Ponytails are for men under 30. Number 63. Pay your political debts. Number 64. Campaign finance reform has done for politics what pantyhose has done for finger-fucking. Number 65. Use the internet to do with thousands of dollars what once required millions. Number 66. Never turn down a major party nomination. Number 67. What's in the public domain is fair game. Number 68. A tan makes a man look vigorous, and a deep tan makes a man look prosperous. Number 69. Everything is recycled. Number 70. Move to the right for the primary. Move to the center for the general. Number 71. Politics is the art of addition, not subtraction. Number 72. Folks want to get government out of the boardroom and the bedroom. Number 73. Pick a running mate who won't hurt you, and make sure the glove fits. Number 74. Prepare for when the voters are paying attention. Number 75. Trust your pollster. Number 76. Do not fool your tailor. Number 77. Trousers must hang from the waist, and know if you dress right or dress left. Number 78. The best candidate is one who's lost once. 5. How to stay on top. Number 79. The higher you get on the flagpole, the more people can see your ass. And a political mistake is like a fart. Sometimes you have to just step away. Number 80. Lay low, play dumb, keep moving. Number 81. Admit nothing, deny everything, launch counterattack. Number 82. Politics is motion. Number 83. Politics is the perception of motion. Number 84. Hypocrisy is what gets you. Number 85. Don't shoot the guy behind you. Number 86. Greeks bearing gifts are probably trying to fuck you up the ass. Number 87. Drop your voice. Don't shout. Number 88. Picture the picture. Number 89. Don't dress above the voters. Number 90. Always control the lighting. Number 91. Don't be afraid to introduce people. Number 92. Politics is about the future, not the past. Number 93. Reinvent yourself. 6. Cashing in. Sex, money, and notoriety. Number 94. Nothing is on the level. Number 95. Don't tell me the case. Tell me the judge. Number 96. There is only one party, the party of green. Number 97. Money is like manure on a farm. No good if you don't spread it around. Number 98. Overtip. Number 99. Never pass up the opportunity to have sex or be on television. Number 100. Let's talk about sex, baby. Number 101. Pizza is like sex. Number 102. Size does matter. Number 103. Never ride in a white limousine. Number 104. Ethnic traits are what they are. Number 105. Be blasé in the face of celebrity. Number 106. Cufflinks should be understated, small, and elegant. Number 107. Cuff length, up to you, but show some. Number 108. 2-inch cuffs. Number 109. Monograms, and avoid excess. Number 110. A word about jewelry. Don't. Number 111. The Brooks Brothers style white, all-cotton, button-down collar shirt is an indispensable element of every gentleman's wardrobe. Number 112. Too much of a good thing is about right. Number 113. When your candidate tells you your TV spot is on too heavily, and people are complaining about seeing it too much, you are just starting to permeate the public consciousness. 7. Rogers' Rules for Survival. Number 114. Cock your hat. Angles or attitudes. Number 115. Dick Nixon's Silver Bullets. Number 116. Dick Nixon's Silver Bullet Martini Recipe. Number 117. It's gravy, not sauce. Number 118. Never wear the same suit 2 days in a row. Number 119. The press is not the enemy. Number 120. Avoid the obvious. Number 121. They're all pink on the inside. Number 122. The Democrats are the party of slavery. The Republicans are the party of freedom. Number 123. Many are cold, but few are frozen. Number 124. Size matters. Number 125. The fat should avoid horizontal stripes. The thin should avoid verticals. Number 126. Men over 35 require pleats in their trousers, unless very fat. Number 127. No one ever built a statue to a committee. Number 128. Make your most difficult phone call first. Number 129. The bigger the score, the longer the gestation. Number 130. Three men can keep a secret of one, if two of them are dead. Number 131. The word assume makes an ass out of you and me. Number 132. A way to keep your trousers pressed. Number 133. Tie your own bow tie. Number 134. White dress shirts after six. Number 135. Blue blazer and khaki pants are great for college students or Saturdays, but not appropriate for business attire. Number 136. Cowboy hats are like hemorrhoids. Eventually, every asshole gets them. Number 137. Never wear a double-breasted suit and a button-down collar. Number 138. Dark raincoats are for hoodlums. Number 139. Being well-dressed should never become a costume. Number 140. He who laughs last, laughs heartiest. This recording of Stone's Rules, How to Win at Politics, Business, and Style, was presented by Dreamscape Media, LLC. Text copyright 2018 by Roger Stone. Sound recording copyright 2018, Dreamscape Media, LLC. Thank you for listening. Please check www.dreamscapeab.com for Dreamscape's latest releases.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.